Hi, I'm Ryan Flaherty, Nike Senior Director of Performance. For 2 years, I've been making this podcast, talking to experts in every aspect of training, both mental and physical. This season, with all of our lives turned upside down by the coronavirus, I'm calling up some of those same experts, and ones you haven't heard from yet, to find out how they're staying strong while staying home, and how we can do the same. You're listening to Trained at Home.
So having a skill or a tool like meditation, which enables you to step out from that noise, just not externally, because we can all turn off the TV or put down our phones or everything else, but actually being internally, being able to step out of that thought and allowing the mind to be a little more quiet so that we have a bit more clarity, we have a bit more perspective, and we're able to relate to the experience in a healthier way, I don't think it's important. I think it's vital, actually.
That was author and meditation expert Andy Puddicombe on how mindfulness can help us during times of crisis. I think on some level, we already know this. When things are uncertain and our minds are racing, that's the best time to just slow down and breathe. But it's also a time when slowing down and breathing can feel overwhelming or impossible, especially if we've never tried it before. Watching our thoughts during a crisis means watching difficult thoughts, and watching TV is a lot easier. So I invited Andy back onto the show to talk about why mindfulness is so important right now, and also to dive deep into how we can all practice it when we need it most. I can't think of a person more equipped for the job. Andy's been teaching meditation for more than 20 years, first as a Buddhist monk, and now as the co-founder of Headspace, an app that's brought meditation to millions of people. That's always been Andy's mission, empowering as many people as possible to be mindful. And that is what we'll be aiming for today. Well, first off, Andy, thank you for taking the time to jump on with us today. I really appreciate it.
Always, man. It's a pleasure.
First off, what have the last few weeks looked like for you?
I feel incredibly fortunate where we are right now. Headspace happens to be like as busy as we have ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, you know, I'm continuing to work in the way the way that I was before. My family are healthy and well. We have young kids. So the main thing has been for us as a family, just settling into that new rhythm, trying to help the kids understand why they can't see their friends, kind of why they're not going to school, and trying to give them, you know, they're young, but still trying to give them some sense of routine and learning kind of at home. So compared to a lot of people, we have it good, but yeah, I think it's a frightening time for every person, for every family. You know, I think inevitably there's some anxiety, and you know, you see it kind of, I don't know if you're still exercising outside or not, Ryan, but if you're going out for a run once in a while, I went out for a run earlier, and look, running normally is such a relaxing kind of thing, right? Well, at least the way I run, which is very slow. And, you know, when I went out there today, you know, like, there's so much tension. Like, everyone's obviously kind of trying to avoid each other, and just, you can feel the tension in the air.
Yeah, you absolutely can. And for people who maybe know about meditation or have heard about it but haven't yet started it, why in this present moment could it be such a helpful tool for them given, you know, what we're all experiencing?
Yeah, so look, I'm biased. I think meditation is a very helpful tool at every time in our life. But I think right now, so many people are feeling anxious, stressed. They're struggling with sleep. They're more challenged in their relationships as everyone is sort of condensed together in small spaces, especially if there are sort of kids involved in those family structures as well. I think a lot of people are really struggling with the amount of inner dialogue that's going on. They're finding themselves constantly plugged into the news cycle, to social media, and really unable to step out from that sort of noise. So having a skill or a tool like meditation, which enables you to step out from that noise, just not externally, because we can all turn off the TV or put down our phones or everything else, but actually being internally, being able to step out of that thought and allowing the mind to be a little more quiet so that we have a bit more clarity, we have a bit more perspective, and we're able to relate to the experience in a healthier way, I think is I don't think it's important. I think it's vital, actually. Mm. And my hope is that many people who have never come into contact with meditation as a result of this will adopt it, and it will become part of their routine.
One of the things I've been personally, selfishly excited to kind of talk to you about has been this idea that something that's really been, I've been feeling really strongly, and something I've been trying to really meditate on and kind of do some introspection on, is just this idea of control. I think just human nature, there's a human need to have some sense of autonomy, some sense of control over any something, you know, just even if it's like, getting back to like, you could control your breathing, control your breath. Like I found myself sometimes in kind of even coaching athletes on just this idea that we're out of control. And so there's this need to sense that you need some control over something. And sometimes that can come out in a really negative way. Like you could find yourself trying to control people or things that, you know, around you, or situations, to have more of a sense of control over things that you don't.
Yeah.
It's really an important thing to look at. And so can you talk a little bit about that need of control and why right now specifically that may be something that's coming up for a lot of people?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of fascinating from a meditation point of view, a mindfulness point of view.
Yeah.
You know, the entire journey of meditation is about letting go, letting go of everything, including control. And I think when things happen in life that remind us that we're not in control, it's incredibly challenging. It's challenging because of what we're having to deal with on a practical kind of level, but it's also challenging to our identity, challenging to our philosophy, the way we look at life, the way we live our life, because it's essentially contradicting that idea that we have some sense of control. So I think it's really normal for people to feel anxious, often very frustrated in these situations where it feels like control's been taken out of our hands. And if you come back to the very idea of meditation, that it's not necessarily the thing, it's our relationship with the thing, for me, that's kind of where we get a little bit closer to how can we work with this in a way that feels as though, not that we're in control of it, because we're most definitely not, but but in a way that we can feel like we still have a sense of peace of mind, that we still are able to maintain healthy relationships with those around us, and we can, you know, still stick to certain routines that we know are good for us. So yes, we can integrate or bring in elements of our life and commit to those to help bring about some structure. But at some level, there has to be some degree of acceptance that what's happening around the world is out of our control. Otherwise, we're just left feeling very frustrated, very anxious, and probably unable to sleep.
For people that right now may be experiencing anxiety, why is meditation something that can be helpful for that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think, so we tend to most of us live with the idea that there are one set of emotions that are good and positive and one set of emotions that are bad and negative. We don't like the way those more challenging emotions make us feel, and we therefore think they are wrong. And so we kind of set up a framework in the mind, a dynamic in the mind, that when they arise, that we tend to resist them in some way. And that resistance towards them, rather than getting rid of the emotion, it actually builds up strength in that emotion, and we tend to get sort of stuck in it. So we get caught up and stuck in a cycle of anxiety, or stuck in a cycle of sadness or anger, whatever it might be. I think with anxiety, for me, the interesting thing is, you know, in meditation, it's about getting comfortable with our thoughts as they are and with our emotions as they are. So purely from a meditation point of view, and I know this sounds absurd if you are currently struggling from anxiety, and I will give it some context. But we can say, okay, can we be at ease with excitement? Can we be at ease with anxiety? Can we be at ease with joy? Can we be at ease with fear? Like, it doesn't matter what the emotion is. The emotion is not the thing. The thing is our relationship to our mind, to our emotions, to our feelings, to our sensations. So I actually think, yes, anxiety can show us and tell us when something is maybe out of whack in our life, or the way that we're, the way things are happening kind of around us. But it can also show us our patterns of mind, our, if you like, our habitual patterns, where we are seeking to get away from a particular feeling. And if you think about it, if we want to understand the mind better, if we really want to understand anxiety, we've got to spend time with it.
Mm.
We can't understand it unless we spend time with it. If we are continually running away from it, there's no way that we are ever going to befriend it. And when I look at the greatest athletes, the greatest sports people in the world, they know their mind. Like, it's not that they're free from anxiety. There is no way. Well, they're human beings. As human beings, we experience anxiety. But they have got to a place where they're okay with anxiety. Maybe not all the time, but most of the time. They're able to kind of embrace that and make that part of their life, part of their performance. And for me, that's kind of where we all want to sort of move towards in our life. Not trying to get rid of these emotions, but trying to get to a place where we can befriend them, be at ease with them. And that's real freedom, right? Because then there's, if our goal is to get rid of them or get away from them, then we're constantly involved in an internal battle, an internal dialogue. But if we've got to a point where there's freedom of mind, anxiety's here. It's okay, it's here. If it's not here, it's okay, it's not here. There's none of that kind of constant tension going on.
When you say befriend, can you help me with that?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean by that? What's like something you would recommend people do?
Just pause. You don't have to sit like upright. You know, you can lie down on the bed, lie on the sofa, on the floor, whatever. But just pause for a minute, maybe a couple of minutes, and just see how it feels. Probably the mind will be quite turbulent to begin with, because we feel the anxiety, we tend to then sort of, you know, get caught up in some thoughts. That'll happen a bit to begin with. But actually, the interesting thing is when we don't try and run away from it, when we don't resist it, anxiety starts to behave in a different way. It tends to sort of start to disperse a little bit, starts to dissolve a little bit, and we start to feel the mind become a little calmer. So it's in it's either in pushing against it or in running away from it that we amplify it. In sitting still with it and being present with it, we actually allow it to dissipate.
How are you doing, you know, amongst the quarantine personally? Like, how is your stress and your anxiety right now?
So in terms of the quarantine itself, most of my friends are kind of making fun of me, you know, like in the sense that I was a monk for a long time. I spent a long time in confined spaces, not allowed to go out. So like that aspect of it is less of an issue. I don't kind of feel the urge to, you know, desperately be outside or anything like that. I think like anybody, the stress comes from like worrying about those sort of close to me. And again, you know, I'm very fortunate. I haven't lost anybody. And yeah, I know people who have it, but I don't know them sort of, you know, really well. But I do. I think of my boys, and I think, you know, inevitably you go through the scenarios. I think that's part of being human. I don't spend a lot of time dwelling on that. It doesn't stop me going to sleep at night. But I do find myself imagining when I hear stories of young children having died from it. Of course, as a parent, you think, like, wow, you know, what would that be like? Yeah. Or if, you know, my wife has had bronchitis more times than I care to think of. And I, you know, although she's very fit and healthy, I think, you know, how would she cope if she caught it? And so, yeah, I find those are the areas of stress, or whether it's my parents kind of back home or a little older, my dad that's in a care facility with, you know, is very vulnerable. So I think like most people, I don't spend any time really thinking about or worrying about whether I might get it myself. That's where I get sort of the stress from.
I can absolutely relate to that, because I think it's always for me the worry and stress I'm feeling is about others, not about me. And I think so for people listening who feel the same way you do, which is it's not about them, more about worry about others, what's your process to kind of as you work through that for yourself?
Yeah, so one is to not fight it. Again, resistance is futile. If it's coming up in the mind, don't try and fight it. Like those thoughts are naturally occurring. You haven't made, unless you are deliberately sitting down and trying to imagine those scenarios, you're not making them happen. The mind, that's the way the mind is expressing itself. So allow the mind to express itself. If it makes you feel sad, allow yourself to feel sad. Now, I definitely have had situations where I found myself welling up and, yeah, as much as possible, I just let that happen. That's okay. That's not wrong. Again, it's not that we're doing something wrong. But the way I kind of deal with it in a more sort of active, intentional way, is it's an exercise called loving kindness. I learned it at the monastery. It's a beautiful exercise. It helps calm ourselves whilst at the same time improving and increasing the connection we have with the people we love. So I bring to mind those individuals that I'm worried about, that I care about. I picture them sitting somewhere that I know they love. Maybe it's the boys' favorite holiday place or something like that. I imagine them smiling, and then you work with the breath. So with every, so you're still focused on your breath, your own breath, but as you breathe and as you exhale, you imagine, you focus on that person, that image of that person. You imagine them looking increasingly healthy, increasingly happy, increasingly relaxed, increasingly at ease. And it's so nice because it, by focusing on our own breath, it settles our own mind. But in focusing on their happiness, it brings about a joy and a connection that we might feel we're missing, especially if we're separated by oceans, by states, or by, you know, communities, and we can't get to the people that we would ordinarily like to be around in times like this.
Can you talk a little bit about the science behind meditation and what's happening in the brain when we meditate?
So, look, the science of meditation is something that both Rich and I have been, Rich, co-founder of Headspace, we've been passionate about since the very outset of this 10 years ago. In fact, a scientist was, I think, our second hire at Headspace, yeah. And our first paper that was published goes back about 8 years ago. So I didn't know at that stage kind of the potential for physiological change in the body related to meditation. I'd obviously had the benefits myself, and anecdotally I knew from others the potential of meditation, but I didn't know about the science of it. And the thing that got both Rich and I kind of fascinated was learning more about neuroplasticity. So the brain's ability to change. So if we go to the gym and we train a particular muscle, we get more blood flow going to that muscle. And as a result, that muscle probably over time will get a little bit thicker, a little bit stronger. And in the same way, when we sit and meditate, there are parts of the brain, the parts that we would like to get thicker and stronger, they receive more blood flow. And the actual brain, the cortex itself, starts to change. So we start to experience a greater feeling of happiness and well-being. At the same time, the parts of the brain, which are perhaps more reactive, perhaps things that we don't kind of find so useful. I don't mean reactive in a sporting context. I mean sort of in habitual pattern context. They start to receive less blood flow. And so we're no longer caught up in some of those old habits. So all of a sudden that transformed things for me, because it was no longer just a psychological thing. It was a physiological thing. The brain itself was changing. It wasn't just the mind. It was also the brain itself.
Can you talk a little bit about how movement can be a really great tool to use to meditate?
Absolutely. So I think it's helpful, Ryan, just to differentiate between meditation and mindfulness, because I think that's where a lot of the confusion kind of stems from. So mindfulness is our ability to be present, undistracted, with an open mind, you know. And we can do that, not just in meditation. We can do that while we're out running. We can do that while we're cycling or swimming or whatever it might be. The tricky thing is, it's quite hard just to learn how to be more mindful. Just, you know, you say to someone, oh, you're out running. Oh, that's fine. Just don't think so much. Just be more present. Like, right. That's really, really hard. So we kind of need an opportunity where we take ourselves away from the busyness, the activity of everyday life, and we simply focus on getting familiar with that quality of mind, of being more present. That's meditation, where we remove ourselves for long enough, a minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it might be, but long enough to feel more familiar with what it is to be present. We then take that quality back into our sports, our exercises, our activities, our relationships, whatever it might be. And yeah, I think, look, we've done a bunch of stuff with Coach Bennett, obviously on the Nike platform, out running, and I meet so many people who kind of say that is their entry point to mindfulness. It's not meditation, it's running. And, you know, they find that there is something in the rhythm of it. And when there is a degree of coaching and guidance that shows them how to step out of the thinking mind, so they're no longer using running as their planning session for the day, they're no longer using running as a way of sort of having conversations with people who do exist or don't exist about things that may or may not have happened. Instead, they're actually kind of present in the body, focused more on their technique, more on what's going on around them, and actually starting to enjoy the run, having a bit more fun with it. So I love, you know, as someone who's passionate about sports, passionate about, you know, athletics, I love the idea of physical exercise being an entryway to mindfulness, and it's a legitimate one. It's not like a cheat, you know. It's a legitimate way into the journey of mindfulness, and more often than not, when people begin that, over time they start kind of trying maybe a little bit of meditation, and they see how the two can kind of work together really well.
After the break, we're going to actually meditate with Andy. He'll take us through an exercise that all of us can use right now. So stick around. We'll be right back.
If you're enjoying this episode of Trained, here's some good news. You'll find more wellness expertise every day on Nike.com, the Nike app, the Nike Run Club app, and the Nike Training Club app. And in regions where NTC Premium is available, that's free now too. You can learn more about movement, mindset, nutrition, recovery, and sleep, and you can get started on a workout as soon as you finish this episode.
Obviously, meditation and mindfulness are incredible things to bring into the home to help the family and the unit to get through this time. Is there opportunity to kind of do this as a group together outside of it just being an individual? And how would you recommend people think about that?
100%. You know, so when we first launched Headspace for Kids, I don't think we were too clear kind of whether is that for classrooms and teachers, is it for kids at home on their own? And what we realized kind of really quickly, actually, it was something that parents did with their children. And I think it's actually a really special kind of way of experiencing meditation as a family. You know, I grew up learning with my mom. I was 10, 11 years old when we started meditating together. Just to be clear, it wasn't that I was living, you know, in a commune or something. Like, I was living like a really, really normal life. I was very active, playing lots of sports. It was just something that found itself into our household, and we started doing it. I think there's something really beneficial about doing it together and experiencing it together and then talking about it together. Because otherwise it does become this thing where everyone's sort of just popping off to do their own thing and then jumping back into life. I think there's something really nice about, hey, should we all just stop? And I think it also sort of strengthens the idea of practice as well. I'm so grateful when I think back to monastery and stuff. If I'd have been trying to do that much meditation on my own at home, there's no way I would have stuck to it. There would have been times where I just got up and walked away because it was too difficult. And, you know, I think knowing that you're there as a community, it doesn't matter how big the community is, family, community, or bigger, kind of it just strengthens that thing, that resolve of, okay, let's all come together every day for 5 minutes and we'll all just sit down, lie down, and we'll just do this exercise together. I think it's a really kind of powerful bonding moment as a family.
For people who are listening right now that are maybe meditating or doing exercise in the morning, but still are finding themselves really struggling to get out of that feeling of stress or worry or panic in a way, what's like something you would recommend people do?
Well, the first thing that's important to remember is that meditation is a journey for life. And we hear that, oh, it's a journey for life. That's nice. But we don't really kind of take that in, what that means. That means that we are learning for the rest of our life. That it's not that we just do it and then, oh, okay, we got it now. You know, and as we go through life, more and more situations, you know, come into our life. Outside of this pandemic, we are faced with sickness of ourselves, of others. We are faced with the loss of people that we love. We are faced with change and everything else. Right now, within the pandemic, there's just an amplification of that. And there is so much going on. So it stands to reason that really, no matter how much meditation we've done, we will still be challenged by the situation. We'll be challenged by the loss of the control that we talked about the unpredictability, the uncertainty, whether it's around health, whether it's around work, whatever it might be. And so I think it's really natural. And I guess I just want people to know that it's normal to feel that way. It's natural to feel that way. It's not because your meditation has let you down. It's not because you are doing something wrong. It's not because there is something wrong with the mind. Like, it is natural to feel overwhelmed and stressed by something like this. We're human. And so more than anything, like right now, sort of, I recommend people try to be like gentle with themselves, try to be kind with themselves. And by being more gentle and kind with ourselves, we tend to do that with those around us as well. So it's not necessarily kind of meditating more. In fact, I would almost, in terms of duration, I would almost discourage that, because I think if we're sitting and we're feeling agitated and we start thinking, oh, is this working? I don't know if it is any, and we're just caught up in thinking, well, then we're not really meditating anymore and we're just sitting down with our eyes closed. So think about it more in terms of quality rather than quantity, and think about breaking it up into bite-sized chunks. So I would say maybe try it 3 times a day. Do 3 minutes in the morning, 3 minutes at lunchtime, 3 minutes in the evening. So there is that feeling of connectivity throughout the day. So you're constantly reminded of that quality of mindfulness rather than just having one session and then hoping that for the next 23 hours and 50 minutes, everything will kind of go okay. Or even breaking it down more than that, you know, and you pause for 60 seconds. You do it again mid-morning, again at lunchtime. So I always kind of would lean towards continuity and stability rather than sort of just duration at one particular time in the day.
What advice do you give to people who have experienced any form of loss in the moment we're in right now? And what would be some advice you'd have for them?
Yeah, there are many different types of grief, and grief takes its own form and is experienced differently by every individual. And my own experience of grief and what I have seen in friends, in family, in people I've worked with meditation over the years, is that grief kind of has its own journey. And again, it comes back to that idea of control. We want to control it. We kind of either want to draw a line under it, or we want to move past it or through it. And grief doesn't really work like that. We kind of have to give grief space and time. And this can be grief of the loss of a loved one. It can also be the loss of a job. It can be the loss of a home. There are many, many different forms of grief. And obviously there are practical things we have to do that we can't just give it space and time. Like there are some things that we have to do. But in terms of our inner dialogue and the way that we feel ourselves, we kind of have to give ourselves time to grieve. And part of that, it comes back to where we started, Ryan, which is, this is not about how do we get rid of uncomfortable emotions. This is how do we get comfortable sitting with those emotions. And when we do that, we give them the space they need to breathe. We allow them the time they need to be processed, to be understood. We're not trying to force things. We're kind of allowing nature to take its course. And I feel like more than ever, kind of this is a, you know, this pandemic is a reminder that we're not separate from nature, that we are nature. And if we can sort of approach the mind, if we can approach our experience, our relationship and everything else through that lens, then all of a sudden we're not trying to push things. We wouldn't sit by a tree and just will the tree to grow and then will the fruit to fall. Like, we recognize, right? The tree takes time.
Yeah.
The apples will fall off when they're ready to fall off. But we don't approach our own mind like that. We tend to kind of set a schedule and say, okay, I'm going to move through that and then I'm going to go. So if we can think of it more in that way, that we are nature, and in the same way, kind of we can't force these things. We kind of just have to give ourselves a space and time, and the body will let go of the tension when it's ready to let go of the tension. The mind will let go of that thinking or that feeling of being overwhelmed when it's ready to do so. And the more space and time we can give it, the easier that process will be.
Yeah, that's great. That's perfect way to talk about that. I know this is like kind of asking that musician buddy at a party to play for the rest of the audience, but I hope you entertain us. Will you just give us a quick meditation to kind of wrap up and just finish? And as we head out, I'm going to end on this. I just want to say thank you very much for taking the time to spend with us and to give all of the amazing advice and just being who you are. Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan, and thanks, as always, for having me on, you know. So, look, we've just been talking about this exercise called loving kindness. So why don't we do this right now? I think it's the perfect meditation for this time. So we're going to start in exactly the way we normally would. So the setup is the same. We start off with our eyes open and just a really soft focus. And the purpose of that is just so that we kind of set the tone so it's relaxed. We're not kind of focused on one particular thing. The mind's very spacious. And just with that soft focus, we take just a couple of big, deep breaths. So just for these first few breaths, we breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. So as you breathe in, just noticing how the body expands as it fills with air. And as you breathe out, notice how the muscles soften as the body exhales. And with the next out breath, you can just gently close your eyes. Before you do anything else, just take a moment just to enjoy that feeling, or just to pause for long enough to notice the feeling of being still, of having nothing to do, having nowhere to go for this moment. Just feel the weight of the body pressing down against the seat, against the floor, and just feeling the weight of the hands and the arms just resting on your legs. And as you sit there, just starting to notice the breath, so remembering that idea of the breath connecting the body and mind. You don't have to breathe in any special way, but just noticing that rising and falling sensation. If you find it helpful, you can gently place your hand on your chest, your diaphragm, your stomach, wherever you feel that movement. And that's going to be our anchor, our point we come back to if ever we get distracted. So just letting the breath do its own thing. And then just bringing to mind that person now. So it doesn't matter who it is, but someone you care about. Someone you would like to see healthy, happy, and well. And just picture them in a place you know that they'd enjoy, you know they'd find relaxing. And then with every out-breath, you're just picturing that person looking a little more relaxed, a little more at ease. Maybe you see a smile begin to emerge on their face, see their shoulders let go of any tension. And you can stay with that for as long as you'd like to. For now, we're just going to see that person looking as relaxed as you can imagine, as happy as you can imagine, feeling an increased sense of connection with that person. Just coming back to the breath for a moment. Back to that feeling of weight, of contact. And then whenever you feel ready, just gently opening the eyes again.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Andy. Appreciate you. And we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Bye now.
I always love talking to Andy. He has a way of demystifying mindfulness that makes it seem simple, but also natural to the state of being alive. It's a great reminder right now that we all have this capacity to find a moment of calm within ourselves, no matter what's going on around us. Next week, I'll be switching gears and calling up CrossFit legend Josh Bridges. He'll tell me about the training, recovery, and mindset that helped him achieve one of the longest careers in the sport. This has been Trained at Home. If you've enjoyed this episode of Trained, help us spread the word by rating and reviewing the podcast. That way we can keep making great episodes for you to listen to, and it helps other people find us too. If you've got a question for me or my guests, or a topic you'd like to see covered, email me at trained@nike.com and I'll see what I can do. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Trained. Just a reminder, always talk with your doctor before starting any training or nutrition program. The information we provide, it's not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And the individual opinions expressed here are just that, opinions. They shouldn't be taken as fact.